Storm was more beautiful by far than Mark had remembered. Her hair was long and bleached at the ends by salt water and sun. Her feet were bare, her arms and legs were tanned and slim and supple as ever, but it was her face that had changed. Although she wore no cosmetics, the skin had the shine of vibrant youth, like the lustre inside a seashell, and her eyes were clear and bright with health. Yet there were new depths to them. The petulant set of her mouth had softened. Her arrogance had become dignity. In that moment, as they stared at each other, he knew that she had indeed grown from girl to woman in the time since he had last seen her. And he sensed that the process had been agonizing, but that from it all was emerging a new value, a new strength, and the love which had been in him all this time spread out to fill his soul. "Storm," he said, and her eyes opened wide as she stared at him.
"You!"
Her voice was a little cry of pain, and she tried to drag the door closed. Mark jumped forward and held it. "Storm, I must speak with you." She tugged desperately at the door handle. "Go away, Mark, please go away." All the new dignity and poise seemed to crumble, and she looked at him with the wide, frightened eyes of a child waking from nightmare. At last she knew that she could not force the door against his strength, and she turned away and walked slowly back into the house.
"You shouldn't have come," she said miserably, and the child seemed to sense the changed air. It squalled. "Oh, hush, baby," Storm called softly.
But her voice goaded it into a fresh outburst, and she crossed the room on bare feet with the long veil of hair hanging down her back. The room was starkly furnished, the cement floor bare and cool, no rugs to soften them, but along the walls were stacked her canvases, many of them blank, but others half-finished or completed, and the familiar, evocative smell of turpentine was heavy and pungent. The child lay belly down on a caross of monkey skins laid out on the cement floor. Legs and arms were spread in that frog-like baby attitude, and except for a toweling napkin around the hips, it was naked and suntanned. The head was thrown back angrily, and the face flashed with the force of its yells. Mark stepped into the room and stared with sickly fascination at the child. He knew nothing of babies, but he could see that this was a sturdy and aggressively healthy small animal. The limbs were strong, kicking and working with a violent swimming motion, and the back was broad and robust. "Hush now, darling," cooed Storm, as she knelt beside him and lifted him under the armpits. The napkin slid down to the child's knees, and there was no doubting that he was a boy. His tiny penis stuck out at half-mast, like a white finger with its little floppy chef's cap of loose, wrinkled skin. Mark found himself hating this other man's child with a sudden, frightening hatred. Yet he went forward involuntarily to where Storm knelt with the baby in her lap. Mother's touch had quelled the shouts of anger, and now the boy was smacking his lips and making little anticipatory hunger grunts and pawing demandingly at Storm's bosom. The child had a fine golden cap of hair, through which Mark could see the perfect round of his skull, and the little blue veins under the almost translucent skin. Now that the furious crimson tide of anger had receded from his face, Mark saw how beautiful was the child, as beautiful as the mother. And he hated it. He hated it with a bitter, sickening feeling in his stomach and a corrosive taste in his mouth. He moved closer, watching Storm wipe a dribble of saliva from the child's chin and hoist up his napkin to the waist. The child became aware of a stranger. He started and lifted his head to stare at Mark. And there was something hauntingly familiar in that face. The eyes that looked at him had looked at him before, and he knew them so well. "You should not have come," said Storm, busy with her baby, not able to lift her eyes to him. "Oh, God, Mark, why did you come?" Mark went down on one knee and stared into the child's face, and it reached out towards him with a pair of plump hands, dimpled and pink and damp with spit. "What is his name?" Mark asked. Where had he seen those eyes? Involuntarily, he extended his forefinger, and the child grabbed it with a fat little chuckle and tried to stuff it into his mouth. "John," Storm answered, still not looking at him. "John was my grandfather's name," Mark said huskily. "Yes," whispered Storm. "You told me."
The words meant nothing for a moment. All he was aware of was that the hatred he felt for this little scrap of humanity slowly faded. In its place there grew something else. Then suddenly he knew where he had seen those eyes. "Storm?" he asked. Now she lifted her head and stared into his face. When she replied, she was half proud and half defiant. "Yes," she said, and nodded once. He reached for her clumsily. They knelt facing each other on the monkey-skin kaross, and they embraced fiercely, the child held awkwardly between them, gurgling and hiccuping and drooling merrily as it chewed Mark's finger with greedy, toothless gums.
"Oh, God, Mark, what have I done to us?" whispered Storm, brokenly.
Baby John woke them in the silvery, slippery grey light of before dawn. Mark was grateful to him, for he did not want to miss a minute of that coming day. He watched Storm light the candle and then work over the cradle. She made small soothing sounds as she changed the baby, and the candlelight glowed on the sweet clean lines of her naked back. Dark silky hair hung over her shoulders, and he saw that childbirth had not thickened her waist. It still had the flared graceful line, like the neck of a wine bottle, above the tight round double bulge of her buttocks. At last she turned and carried the baby to the bed, smiling at Mark as he lifted the blankets for her. "Breakfast time," she explained. "Will you excuse us, please?" She sat cross-legged in the bed, and she took one of her nipples between thumb and forefinger and directed it into the open, questing mouth. Mark drew as close as he could and placed one arm around Storm's shoulders. He watched with total fascination. Her breasts were big now and heavy, jutting out into rounded cones. There was a pale blue dappling of active veins deep below the skin, and the nipples were the colour of almost ripe mulberries, with the same rough, shiny texture. The child's tugging induced a sympathetic blue-white drop of milk to well from the tip of her other breast. It glistened there like a pearl in the candlelight. John fed with tightly closed eyes and piglet grunts and snuffles. The milk ran from the corners of his mouth, and after the first pangs of his hunger were appeased, Storm had to prod him to keep him from falling asleep again. At each prod his jaw worked busily for a minute or so, and then the level of activity slowly declined until the next prod. Storm changed him from one breast to the other, and laid her own cheek gratefully against the hard, lean muscle of Mark's chest. "I think I'm happy," she murmured. "But I've been unhappy for so long that I'm not quite sure." John lay in a puddle of seawater 2 inches deep. He was stark naked and brown all over to prove this was no unusual state. He slapped at the water with both hands and it splashed into his face, so that he gasped and blinked his eyes and licked his lips, uncertain whether to be angry or to cry. Instead, he repeated the experiment with exactly the same consequences, and he spluttered sand and seawater. "Poor little devil," Storm watched him. "He's inherited the Courtney pride and stubbornness. He won't give up until he drowns himself." She lifted him from the puddle, and there was instantly such a howl of protest that she had to return him hurriedly. "I'm sure if you went to the general, with John," Mark persevered. "You don't really understand us Courtneys." Storm sat back and began to plait her hair over one shoulder. "We don't forget or forgive that easily. Storm, won't you try it? Please go to him. I know exactly how he is, Mark. Better than you, better than Daddy knows himself. I know him so well as I do myself, because we are one person. I am he and he is me. If I go to him now, having done what I did, having insulted him, having destroyed all the dreams he wove about me, if I go now, when I am destitute of pride and honour, if I go as a beggar, he will despise me for ever." "No, Storm, you are wrong." "On this I am never wrong, Mark, darling. He would not want to despise me, just as he hopes not want to hate me now. But he would not be able to help himself. He's Sean Courtney, and he is trapped in the steel jaws of his own honour." "He's a sick man. You must give him the chance." "No, Mark, it would kill him. I know that. And it would destroy me. For both our sakes, I dare not go to him now." "You don't know how much he cares for you." "Oh, I do, Mark. I also know how much I care for him. And one day, when I'm proud again, I will go to him. I promise you that. When I know he can be proud of me,
and I will take him that as a gift.
Oh, damn you and your stiff, cruel pride. You nearly destroyed us with it also. Come, Mark, she stood up. Take John's other hand.
They walked the child between them along the firm, wet sand at the edge of the surf. He hung on to their hands, leaning forward to watch his own feet appear and disappear magically below him, and he let out great shouts of triumph at his accomplishment. The day was bright and clean, and the gulls caught the wind and rode above them on smoky white wings, answering the child's shout with their own harsh cries.
Oh, I had so many fine clothes and fancy friends, Storm watched the gulls. I sold the clothes and lost the friends, and found how little any of it really meant to me. Look at the gulls, she said, head thrown back. See the sunlight through the spread feathers. I was so busy that I never had time to see clearly before. I never saw myself, nor those around me. But now I am learning to look.
I saw that in your painting, Mark said, and lifted John to his chest, delighting in the hot, restless little body.
Your painting, different subjects. I want to be a great artist.
I think you will be. That Courtney stubbornness again.
We don't always get what we want, she told him, and the spent surf came sliding up the beach and creamed around their ankles.
The child slept face down on the monkey-skin kaross, exhausted with sun and sea and play, his belly bulging with food. Storm worked at the easel under the window with narrowed eyes and cocked head.
"You're my favourite model," she said.
"Oh, that's just because I'm so cheap," and she laughed lightly.
"With what I pay you, I could be rich," she pointed out.
You know what they call ladies who do it for money?" Mark asked lazily and relapsed into silence, giving himself up to the full pleasure of watching her. And they were silent for nearly an hour. Silent, but close and spiritually in tune. Mark spoke at last.
"I know what you mean by seeing more clearly now. That one," he pointed at one of the larger canvases against the wall, "that's probably the best thing you've ever done."
"I hate to sell it. The man who bought it is coming tomorrow."
"You've sold some of your paintings?"
He was startled.
"Well, how do you think John and I live?"
"I don't know." He hadn't thought about that.
"I just supposed you're your husband."
Her expression changed, darkening swiftly. "I want nothing from him." She tossed her head so that the braid of her hair flicked like the tail of an angry lioness. "I want nothing from him and his friends. And my loving friends, all those nice loyal people who stay away from me in droves now that I am the Scarlet Divorcee, have learned a lot since last I saw you. And especially I have learned about that kind of person."
"They are rich," Mark pointed out. "You once told me how important that is."
The dark anger went out of her, and she drooped a little, the brush falling to her side.
"Oh, Mark, please don't be bitter with me. I don't think I could stand that."
He felt something tear in his chest, and he rose swiftly and went to her, picked her up with a swing of his shoulders, and carried her high through the curtained doorway into the small, cool, dark bedroom. It was strange, but their lovemaking was never the same. Always there were new wonders, new accords of desire, the discovery of some little things that excited them both beyond all relation to its apparent significance. Repetition could not weary nor dull the appetite they had for each other, and even as that appetite was totally satiated, so the endless well of their mutual desire began to fill again. It would start again immediately with the lazy touch of fingers, as they lay curled together like sleepy puppies, the sweat of their loving cooling on their skin, raising little goosebumps around the dark rosy aureoles of her nipples.